Welcome to the Record Celtic podcast. My name is Daniel Caw, and this week I'm joined by Michael Gannon and Graham Young. Guys, how are you?
Good, thanks, Daniel. How are you?
Very good, thanks, Graham.
Very well.
I just realised I sound a bit like a game show host there, sorry. That was a wee bit Des O'Connor. I'll try and...
keep the question simple, Daniel, and we'll be all right, mate.
The best place to start this week, there's only one place to start, and that's got to be the Dundee game at Parkhead. Kyogo Furuhashi, Celtic's new hero. What did you make of his performance?
I was there on Sunday. I thought Kyogo was terrific. I can understand why the fans were going wild for him. It was just really infectious. It was mad keen to get involved. His running, his movement was particularly impressive. Finishing was terrific. It's about as close to the perfect home debut, as a perfect home debut you can make. When he went off after his third goal to a standing ovation. You can see what it meant to him as well. He's quite a kind of, looks like a very kind of emotive kid, and he's, let's say, infectious. He was just lapping it all up, wasn't he? Mm-hmm. But in terms of his performance, it was excellent. Listen, I think as well that you have to have the passes to pick him out. I think it's all right making good runs, but the supply line, and I think the supply to him was deadly as well. But he was, listen, movement was terrific. He's got a lot of pace. He kind of ghosts into different areas. He must be a nightmare to play against for defenders because he's not a number nine in the traditional sense. He can go wide, drop deep, and spin in behind, and he's so quick to cover up a lot of ground that he's leaving defenders in his wake. So I think it was a really, really, really impressive debut by the kid, and it's a kind of a lot of potential for what's to come.
What I was really impressed with, Graham, is obviously, as Mick says, he had the physical attributes, his speed, movement. For me, it was his speed of thought. Do you know what I mean? You could see that he was one step ahead of the Dundee defenders.
Yeah, that's a good way of saying it. I think Mick kind of got all the key points there. I think as a debut goes, a home debut, something like that was as perfect as it is. And instantly as well, like, for all the hope that for the new way of playing under Postecoglou, fans need to see it sometimes as well. And for a performance to be that complete, obviously led by Kyogo, the rest of the players, it's very vibrant, very exciting to watch, and that instantly kind of changes the dynamic. You know how it's all about. Obviously, the Hearts game, there was always a feeling that game was going to be tough. So losing that game, it was not ideal, but not unexpected either. But after the win during the week, to follow up with a performance like that, and as you say, Furuhashi, it was very quicker feet, but quicker mind. I think that's the thing. And Christy, not taking away a bad of Christy or any of the passes, but players have Kyogo's quality, obviously he's always looking for the right pass as well, so and his teammates were kind of on the same wavelength. It was I know Dundee after the game, I know it's a stock answer, like James McPate, Charlie Adam, and well, we could have done better, we were a bit, but the problem when Celtic are playing like that, there's not really much teams can do. It's they've got the players and they were playing at a level that's kind of hard to keep up with, and so proved.
I'm going to stitch you up a wee bit here with a bit of a trivia question. Obviously it was a hat trick in his home debut. Who was the last Celtic player? Any idea?
What, to score a hat trick in his home debut?
Hat trick in his home debut. I can tell you it was the 8th of November 1924.
Oh, there was a discreet. It was not originally with Celtic. It was is it Finlay? No.
Close.
William Fleming.
Although, is there a discrepancy? Because I've read a couple of different.
I think there was no talk that it was actually the Celtic's first ever game. Someone's got a hat trick.
Ah, right, okay. Right, that's quite interesting.
I was at school that day, so I didn't get to see it.
Didn't get to see it, that's fair enough. You, Graham, you touched on, I think, Christy there. I thought Ryan Christy was absolutely brilliant at the weekend. Particularly, I think it was for Furuhashi's last goal, the through ball.
The thing that I think quite important now about Christy as well was there's maybe two things going on here. The fact is that yes, he was brilliant, genuinely brilliant, and he was excellent the home game against Midland. But the same fans, in defence to some of the supporters who are maybe a wee bit peeved last season, his style of play, when he burst onto the scene under Rodgers, he was doing a lot of things that he was doing on Sunday. But last season, unfortunately, it was a lot. I think the whole team, it was getting to a deadlock round about the box. So he was forced into these shots. And a lot of times, a lot of big goals as well. Let's not say he wasn't, but that maybe 7 or 8, 9 shots a game, it was excessive. And that nobody, there's not many players on the planet that are going to hit the target consistently for that range. So there was, it was a terrible season, and that kind of was one of the kind of factors. And you know, who was, it was a game last season, who was it, Falkirk or in the cup, where they were tweeting as well, like, it was almost became a figure of fun, which is ridiculous. Like
every ball was in the car.
He's a quality player, and that's him at his best. I think he suits a style of play, like quick passing, and then it's like there's almost no time to meet. Like that pass, as great as it was like instant into feet play. Kyogo made the move, and I think that style of football where often attacks were breaking down last season, it's so pedestrian in the final third. And then he's obviously the, it's almost like basketball, isn't it? Like shooting a three-pointer, and then he's hitting these shots at weird angles. Got in it. That just gets, it was a kind of bad between the fans at home and so, you know, in social media. But that was Christie's best. I think he's an excellent player, and he's playing like that. And there seems a feeling that he might potentially stick around longer by the looks of it. But
I was going to ask that. Do you guys think he'll sign a new contract?
I wouldn't write it off. I mean, listen, I think slightly unfairly, I think Christie's been lumped in with the kind of the want away brigade. Listen, it's an easy way of doing it. I think at the time it was Edward, Ayer, Cham, and Christie all went away. That was kind of almost kind of became accepted fact, but I don't think that's actually the case. I don't think Ryan Christie's ever actually said, I want to go away. He's never agitated for a move or insinuated to the Celtic that was his plan. I think his long-term hopes, I think he's always thought maybe playing in England at some point. Yeah. But he's not going to go just for the sake of going. He's not going to go to a club he doesn't really want to be going to. He's not going to go to some middle-of-the-road side he doesn't really fancy. He knows he's at a good club just now. So I don't think it's been fair to label Christie as this want-away, this, I know it's a very tabloid phrase, a want-away Celtic star and all that nonsense. But it's complete nonsense. He's never actually said that. And I think if Ange Postecoglou wants to become part of his team going forward, and the Celtic board come forward with some sort of decent offer for him contractually, I wouldn't be surprised if he signed it. I think he's not a guy to go look for the grass is greener unless it's a really attractive move. If it's a top 10 team in England, then yeah, I think I could see him going. If that doesn't transpire, I mean, I think a lot about Burnley and these kind of clubs. I don't see him going to a Burnley. I don't think that's what he would fancy. I don't think he's particularly money oriented either. I mean, listen, it's easy saying that these guys earn great money. I mean, compared to most people, certainly compared to us, that's for sure. but I don't think that's his big motivation. I don't think he's chasing big bucks. I don't think if a big team in the Championship said, "Oh, double your money and come and play with us," I'm not sure that would entice him. So I think there's a deal to be done there. It depends on whether or not he buys into the manager's vision and the board can match it as well. But I wouldn't surprise me if he does end up signing a new deal. But then again, it also wouldn't surprise me if a club, a really decent club down in England, say, right, no, we're going to go and get him, because he could get him for a decent price right now.
The other thing as well, I think Mick's bang on about getting lumped in, but there's two sets of quotes. His dad spoke last summer about his ambition at almost a bad time, and it was about 4 weeks out to the Ferencváros game, which is obviously the night Lennon, we've got players that want to leave, Christie was a name. And then even after the Hibs, the Tweets game, I remember it's in the Sunday Mail, and Lennon addressed Christie about his ambition, and I know he would like to maybe go down and play. So that's always been not just paper spit or however you would label it. It's like there's been his dad, his manager at the time, obviously making it clear. But I think the way Mick's explained it, I think that's bang on, where I don't think he's going to rush away. He's agitating for a move, but if the right move doesn't come up, I think he'd be obviously keen to maybe stick around with Celtic.
I think some people jumped on, I mean, that piece with Charlie Christie, his dad, I think some people jumped on that as well. And it's a wee bit out of context as well, because wanting to play in England at some point in your career, I don't think, it doesn't always mean I want to play in England right this minute or right now. And it's not just playing in England, because if Leighton Orient come in for him, he's not going to go to Leighton Orient. I mean, no offence to Leighton Orient, I've been there, it's not a bad little club. A few quid now as well, actually, I should say. But you know what I mean, he's not going to just take any move. So playing in England is kind of, it's a kind of shorthand for wanting out, and I don't think that was the case, and I don't think it is the case.
his contract runs out in January, doesn't it? Strangely.
Yeah, weirdly it's been. I think it get lost in the wash as well with last season, because remember last January, Celtic were on about the hair on fire. It was the kind of dying embers of Neil Lennon's reign. Don't really know what's happening with a new manager at that point in time. So it's a year to go. That's when the contact talks would be starting to take place. But the manager's gone. They're waiting for Eddie Howe to come in, and understandably waiting to see if Howe would fancy what he's got there. Howe collapsed. The new manager come in. So I think it's been a wee bit lost in the wash, the fact that his contract's now ticking down. Mm-hmm. But I don't think you ever accuse him of taking the foot off the gas. I mean, you look at certain players and you think he's out of there and he's not perhaps busting a gut. You can never accuse Ryan Christie of not trying 100% at any point in time.
If anything, to me, it's the opposite. It looks like he's really come back and he's putting on shifting.
He's always been like that, though. That's the kind of player he is. That's why Graham touched on it. Ben Rodgers loved him because he's got the engine to put in an almighty shift in terms of the kind of high pressing game he liked to play, but he's got quality as well. I mean, usually when you get a quality player, you don't want him running about all day, because your quality suffers when you're knackered, basically. The ability to look up and thread a ball is diminished when your legs are like jelly. Do you know what I mean? But Christie's got that combination. He can run about all day. He's got the physicality. He's got a bit of dig about him as well. He's no longer the nice little kid we knew from the Inverness days. When he's a wee bit too nice now, he's got a bit of dig about him. He'll chase down after lost causes and do the high pressing, but still have the energy to pick a ball as well. If Celtic wanted to go and buy Ryan Christie at this point in time, they couldn't afford him. So it makes absolutely sense to me to give him a new contract as soon as possible.
The thing with Christie as well, with the Rangers and Celtic argument, like, you've got last season, every Celtic player was bad because the team was bad. Obviously, that's not the case, but there's a downer on players. Previously, Rangers. And then even now, start of the season, I'm sure the players are as good as they were at Ibrox, right? That's maybe the argument or the way things are looking. But things turn quickly. But Christie, Mick, the way he's described him, you don't get players like that, high energy, plenty of chances created. He's honest, like, he's a really top-level player. There's a strong argument. Everyone playing their best in Scottish football, say, over a three-month period, he's got the most intangible, like, just the makeup of his skill set is so unique. Like, and I think that could be the biggest difference for Celtic. I know they talk about buying players, but Celtic could afford not to buy maybe another central striker, right, but maybe not another winger. Then you go in more money in a right back and a left back and whatever the money gets reinvested. Like, I know you obviously need to pay for a new contract, but it could be a massive moment this season, because there's no guarantees that Celtic are going to be perfect this season. There's going to be still a lot of teething problems, but I think there was enough in the last couple of games to prove they might be pretty decent, and keeping a guy like Christie around for this season could be absolutely massive in terms of winning the league or qualifying to the Champions League next season, which are the two main goals by far.
Well, that's a quick question. Where does Christie play?
I just like him in the left. But then Furuhashi might go to the left.
What position does he actually play? If you play four or five roles, equally as good. If you play on the right, I mean, you know, he plays really well on the right. He can cut inside, very dangerous. He can play out in the left, play centrally. He can play up front. He's played up front. He played up front a lot of times as well last season. You couldn't buy him.
Right.
Can't to buy Ryan Christie right now.
As you just said, Graham, a couple of his balls for the left at the weekend in particular were absolutely brilliant.
It takes the pressure off him, that. It takes the pressure away. Do you know the problems last season? Always on the right-hand side, cutting in and shooting. There was such an onus on. He was a creative player. That was, but at least in the left, yeah, even when he beat for Furuhashi's second goal, we passed it. It's like an old-school winger just going like Ryan Giggs or something, knocking it past and running, then a ball across. It was good to watch.
One player in the Celtic team that I need to hold my hands up, because I've given him a bit of stick, I think, on this podcast as well, but he deserves a lot of praise, rather, easy enough for me to say. Anthony Ralston. I think a lot of Celtic fans on the same boat didn't think he'd perhaps be good enough to make it, but he's put in a real shift and he looks to be developing. Another excellent goal at the weekend, brilliant goal at Tynecastle, and look, he's taking his chance, you know, and that's all he can do, really.
Oh, certainly. Listen, I don't think anyone thinks that Anthony Ralston is going to be the long-term solution at right-back. I would think that even he thinks it's going to be unlikely to be the long-term solution at right-back. But he's done really well. Listen, he's a good, honest pro, Anthony, isn't he? I mean, he doesn't have to get stuck in. And I think I mentioned in the podcast recently, he can actually do a pretty tough job. I mean, that role at fullback in this current formation and way of playing is really, really tough. Right. Listen, the hipsters, you boys are more hipster than me, being young guns. But the kind of inverted fullback kind of role, there's not many clubs that play it in the world, and that's for a reason, because it's brutal. I mean, you're asking fullbacks to take a ball in the half turn and all that stuff, which is not in their comfort zone. A fullback plays a ball pass and then chases him behind, not get 30 yards in front of him and chase it. That's what fullbacks are taught to do from a young age. So he's having to relearn the game practically under this new formation. And he's done really well. I mean, he's popped up with two big goals. His goal at the weekend was cracking. There's tougher tests ahead. He could look at the goal over to Blanc last week and think he was a wee bit of a position, but that's what he's told to play. And it's a danger of that formation that he can get caught in the kind of full-back areas if it goes wrong. So I still think Celtic will recruit a right-back and probably a left-back as well. But in the meantime, he's got stuck in and he's done really well. And you've got to give him praise at the moment.
So for ages, Celtic, the big recruitment drive, it was two right-backs were needed, but definitely not. Like, if you don't want to buy all your players in one summer as well, that'd be... So there's, without a doubt, he's been able to prove he's capable of being a solid backup and a contributor, because there's times where injuries happen. He's already played a run of games, so if he needs to play 4 or 5 games in November or February, he's capable. There's a big hype about him. Mick will probably be able to keep you right. Maybe, I don't know if it's a pure hidden name, but I think it might have been Lee McCulloch back a few years ago. He was convinced he was going to be like the right side of Kieran Tierney. There was big hype of him, and I think it was when he was on at Kilmarnock, and maybe was it Kilmarnock? I might be wrong, but there was belief that he had that Kieran Tierney, and it's maybe not proven to be the case, but I think there's been enough about him in the last few games to show that players are never really kind of fully... It's too easy to write players off, because there's something there. He's more than capable. He's a decent contributor. Couple of goals as well. You can't note that. Like, they're good finish. Both goals have been crackers.
I think it was Brendan Rodgers actually said he was like the new Darren McGrain. I might be wrong. I can vaguely remember Rodgers talking about him in the same sentence as Darren McGrain. Before he launched him into the deep end against PSG, that to deal with Neymar. Yeah. Which was the most thankless task you'll ever see in your life. But he'd done his best in that night as well. It was a tough old shift, that one.
I just think in the age of like social media, you know, you guys will have seen it as well, taking a lot of stick and need a new right back, blah blah blah. And I just love the way he's kind of bounced back and taking it in his stride, and as we say, played really well. So we mentioned, you mentioned there, Mick, Celtic's winning the Czech Republic. Obviously, we're recording this on Tuesday. The return match is on Thursday evening. You'd expect Celtic to see off. I was saying Jablonek. Am I getting that right?
I see Jablonek as well, but
Graham's face there was sceptical.
And I'll just note the Czech Jacks. Just keep it simple. Tabloid terms.
Either way, Celtic should get through that, shouldn't they?
Oh, they should do. I mean, they looked pretty limited. I mean, they had a wee spell after half time last week when they kind of, I think their manager said to them at half time, listen, you're going to get horsed here by 5 or 6 unless you try and get a bit of spirit. And they gave it a go, didn't they, for a wee spell. The goal Celtic conceded weren't great, so it made it a bit more kind of respectable result. But Celtic should, and they will, I think they will be more comfortable at Celtic Park. Big crowd, big pitch, a bit of confidence from the weekend. I think it's an opportunity to keep the momentum going for Celtic. They really should be. I'm not saying you can expect to go and wipe the floor with this team, but they should be fairly comfortable, and it should be a pretty straightforward evening. And a chance to, can I say, keep that momentum going, keep that confidence rolling into the weekend.
I don't think we're getting too ahead of ourselves then by saying or having one eye on AZ Alkmaar in the Europa League, the playoff round. They've not even played a league game yet. They played their first league game this weekend. Could that benefit Celtic, Jink?
Yeah, I would say so. I think Alkmaar as well, it's an interesting test for Celtic, because they basically looked a good bet to win the league before COVID shut it down the season before last. And I remember watching how they beat Ajax in the Amsterdam Arena, or Johan Cruyff Stadium, whatever you call it. And they were excellent. And then last season they kind of dipped a wee bit, but they've got... decent. They've been kind of establishing themselves as that kind of nearly side now the last couple of years, and about Feyenoord as well. So that's a good level for Celtic to test themselves. Maybe a Dutch team, that style of football might suit Celtic better. There'll be a lot of like two teams playing the game, probably the way most people enjoy watching it. So I think that's going to be an excellent tie, and I think that's really a really good measuring stick with Celtic. I don't think there's any guy, there'll be more skilled than Michelin anyway, there'll be more danger in the final third. But Celtic should as well, you'd imagine, with their moments in the tie as well, I think. But again, they obviously need to see it off. The one thing about Jablonec's...
well said.
that I found, they didn't have any of the kind of streetwise, like the two Prague sides last year that Celtic and eventually Rangers struggled with as well. They were very quite streetwise. I thought there was none of that again the other night. Celtic were just... It was like, I felt like they were playing a team in the Championship, a cup game at times. I don't know, it was just, there was loads of chances, like really like four or five players open all the time. So I would imagine Celtic would be too much for that on Thursday night.
What, like this, I mean, this is kind of, I think a lot of fans feel this way, the question I'm going to ask. Like, what do you think the financial drop-off is between Europa League and Conference League? I mean, I get you don't want to be, I mean, generally you don't want to be in the Conference League, do you? But is there a massive financial drop-off? Do you think?
Not particularly in terms, because the money you get in terms of the rewards and kind of points and places and all that stuff isn't that much different, and that's not where the teams like Celtic make their money in that, in these competitions. It's the fact that you can get the full houses in,
right,
and get the folk buying the pies and all that stuff. It's that, because if you guarantee, if you get say group stages and a couple of, maybe a knockout tie, a playoff, make it six home ties. Celtic kind of bank about £2.5 million for every home tie. So now that the crowds are back, they're still going to make that kind of money from regardless of competition if they sell out. The only problem would be is if they get a draw and it's teams with just a collection of owls. I mean, they don't know who they are.
No.
It's a harder sell, do you know what I mean, to get tickets sold. I think on the back of the kind of year, 18 months of not being able to go to games, I think fans will want to go to games no matter who it's against.
No.
You're playing against Josh's Giants in the Europa Conference League, and I think they'll turn up to see it purely because they've been starved of football for so long. So I think this year it wouldn't be a financial cliff big enough if you don't make the Europa League, the Conference League. Say less, is it Europa League Conference or Europa League Conference League? I can never work out.
Europa Conference League, I think it is.
The Vanarama League or something like that. I don't think it matters. I think in terms of finances, I don't think the difference is going to be so substantial, to be honest with you. In terms of prestige, yeah, different ball game. But listen, if Celtic didn't get past Alkmaar, which is, by the way, on the balance of probabilities, at this stage in the rebuild, it's probably more likely they wouldn't get past Alkmaar. So they'd be going straight in the group stages of the Vanarama. If they get through that and get a few knockout ties, I think people will be quite excited by that. Obviously, you're looking way down the line. It could give it a few enjoyable evenings and make a few quid in terms of getting Celtic Park full again. It's not where Celtic see themselves or would want to be, but it wouldn't be a disaster in terms of if it did get a run in it and got some coefficient points, keep ticking over. It's actually probably easier to get them in that division, although you get slightly less. And listen, I'm not going to the calculator stuff with the coefficients, but it wouldn't damage us too much in terms of losing our place in the pecking order and keeping that second Champions League spot in the next couple of years and that kind of thing. So it wouldn't be an absolute disaster, that's what I'm trying to say. Slightly less glamorous, but not a complete and utter waste of time.
We should finish off today's podcast, as ever, by talking about some of the transfer targets that have been mentioned this week. And the record just today, obviously, I think I'm saying it right, Thomas Henry, the French striker playing in Belgium, 21 goals in 31 games last season. Looks like a big sort of target man, different kind of striker to what Celtic have got. £7 million though is the sort of price tag. It's a lot of money.
Yeah, it's I've got to be honest, I watched Lucky of the Y Scout and all that, so straight on that.
You love your Y Scout.
Brilliant. So instead of just watching it on YouTube, when you watch an Insta, you're an actual scout. That means there's a big difference to the YouTube. None of the cheesy music. It's a proper scouting, immersive scouting experience. But his hold-up play is excellent. It's really, really good.
Being paid by them here. Youngie, you get a wee kickback here from Y Scout.
I'm putting my hat on.
That sounds like you're branded. That sounded quite good.
I know. But I've got to be honest, I thought his hold-up play is excellent. Like, that's as big, like, as important as it. These target men style players, like, loads of wee layoffs, and understands turning and rolling, and looks quite similar to the way maybe Celtic try to play. I think as good as Furuhashi was on Sunday, you ask maybe a player in his stature to play 50 games through the middle might be a bit of a stretch. So I think that mix and match with players in and out would work. But if you're going for a target style strike, you can see why he would appeal. Definitely, like, he's got the goals, different type of good in the air. And one of the arguments, well, someone made a good point that Postecoglou, when he was Australia manager, a lot of it was made up of balls into the box with Cahill and other players. So he was big in high, what, aerial crosses, where that's not been part of Celtic. Why would it? Because there's been no one to get the ball in. So that you might see a slightly different. I don't think they're going to become a long ball team, but when they're in the final third, you might see more balls across the box, because that was the kind of way they played as well. So.
And look, if Celtic do sign this Henry or, you know, a striker of his ilk, we've talked Griffiths to death, but Albina Yeti, he looks now like he's just not getting a look in either. Is it fair to say he's probably not going to make it to Celtic?
Listen, watch that game on Sunday and see if you can find a way that Griffiths or Yeti could play in that formation and style.
No.
I can't. As much as I think guys like, I mean, so I think Griffiths is maybe have used up his lives at Celtic. I don't know. I know he got a new contract, but that kind of high pressing from the front type thing is not his game. Yeti, I don't think either. He's not that kind of player. He's just a kind of, I'm not entirely sure what Yeti actually brings, really, to be honest with you. Not what I've seen so far, but in terms of he's not a guy who runs about non-stop for 90 minutes, that's for sure. Mm-hmm. So the right move in the wall, I think, for those two.
One of the biggest mistakes, maybe there's been talk about Celtic recruitment mistakes, but if they could even have just got a Yeti in a loan deal last season rather than a permanent, obviously tie it in with Ivan Toney stuff as well, and it's, it just compounds the deal. But someone like Klamala, right, you could see the appeal of someone like that maybe away in Europe, right? And I know he went by a striker to play in away, but he was never quite there. Like, he seems to be doing fine in the MLS, hard working player, maybe he would have been better in this squad. But Yeti, like, he's like a striker for the bygone era. Like, he's something for 20 years ago where the ball just came into the box, and he's like a budget Gary Hooper. That's what he reminded me at the time. Like, Gary Hooper, but not quite as sharp. Do you know what I mean? Gary Hooper come back for an injury. That's what he used to me.
That was a
different
price.
I know. That's
not
what
the budget, Gary Hooper.
That's the type of player, honestly.
What's
just
like, the budget, Gary Hooper?
Exactly, that's it. So I think just in terms of play, like, you need to, Celtic obviously need to get recruitment right, and obviously Furuhashi and Abada look much better fits than the way Postecoglou plays, as does Henry, as funny as well. Even last night, like, you see the name, you're just thinking Henry, isn't it? Just, but then obviously put the French twang on it.
Tam Henry.
No, when I said Henry there, I was actually, my toes were curling.
No, but that is, it's like, it's different, isn't it, when it's obviously
Tam Henry in the Gallagher.
on my little transfer notes here, I've got I just wanted to get both your take on, obviously, we know Joe Hart and James McCarthy. Were you surprised about the length of deals for them both? I think it was 3 years for Hart, 4 years for McCarthy. I thought it was quite, you know, long deals for both of them.
I was a wee bit, yeah. I mean, Joe Hart's 34. The goalkeeper, he's only a bairn, really. So that's not that big a surprise. It's a long-term commitment, but that's how you get these guys. I mean, Joe Hart would have had interest in England. But to commit to him for 3 years is saying, right, we believe in you, you want to be a big part of this club in the future. So that, I can see that. McCarthy, again, he's 30, he's 31 in November. 4 year deal is a long deal. But again, there would have been interest in him as well. I mean, he still played 20 games last year in the top flight in England. Very highly regarded. He's been fit. I mean, there's another kind of narrative that's been allowed to take hold that he's injury prone. And I get it. His last season at Everton, before he got injured, he was out and out with injuries, then he got a broken leg. So he lost a couple of years of his career. He came back at Palace, played a full season. I think he played 40 games. Last season, he only played 20, but he only had maybe two niggling knocks. But not, he didn't spend the whole year on the treatment table. He was fit. He just didn't quite fit in the way that Crystal Palace were playing that season, which is, it happens. But you're talking a guy who's proved himself for 12, 13 years in the top flight in England. So he's a quality operator, and he just needs matches and needs to play. Is he going to play 50, 60 games like Callum McGregor? I would doubt it. Purely because he has a lot of kind of miles in the clock. And this is a guy who played first team at Hamilton at 15 years old. He played 150 games before he was 19.
That's crazy.
It might be that's caught up with him a wee bit. That's a great thing in terms of your career, but it can also have an adverse effect. I think we've seen a wee bit with Kieran Tierney as well. 150 appearances by 19. Has had a career, maybe a wee bit of struggle with his injuries. So in England, I think Michael Owen is another one. Burst in, played a lot of games before he was 20, suffered a wee bit down the line. Maybe he's got like overexposure at a young age, has caught up with him a wee bit. But he'll be given, he's got a bit of scope now at Celtic. It's this 4-year deal. They can play 25, 30 games a season for Celtic. Especially in the games that are in European level games and big games in Scotland. He's a guy who knows what he's doing. He can play that kind of number six role. As good as anyone in the last 10 years. So I think he'd be quality. It'll be interesting to see how he does fitness-wise, obviously.
I'm a big fan. I think the deal, there's obviously an element of this with McCarthy. Just Max kind of summed it up perfectly, the amount of games he's played and so forth. But I just get a feeling that if he plays an offer, there's no, he just has a run. Like, he's just classy, and I think McGregor will feel so comfortable with him as well. But Soro, to be fair, Soro's just a bit reckless, right? He's no, but there's plenty in depth. I thought he was all right away in the Czech Republic the other night, to be fair. I thought he had a decent enough game. But if you take his games down, like McCarthy, just, you can imagine Ibrox. To me, Ibrox last season, the game they probably should have won, where Soro was starting and Brown came off the bench, right? Both of them were incomplete. Brown passed his best, Soro decent but a bit kind of inexperienced. Or something like McCarthy's the best of both worlds, where you get plenty of ability, but he's also, I think, get plenty off. And I just think that midfield, but Ryan Jack, if Ryan Jack's, in my opinion, so important to the way Rangers play, I think everybody's opinion is excellent. So you've got McGregor and McCarthy can carry that fight. Celtic need to be strong when they go to Ibrox. They can't just, they might have an idea how football should be played and Ferex, but you've got to win the individual battles. I know it's cliche, but it's so true, especially in the away games. And I think McCarthy, could, that's when you'll find him straight into the European games. That if he can get going soon, he's a fixture at Ibrox and then into the European, either Europa League or Conference League, then I think it could be a really inspired signing. But the deal, you maybe need to pay that extra year as well because there might have been competition. I'm not saying it's, but sometimes these are the things that get you over the line. Do you know what I mean?
Probably a bit of maths involved as well, because a 2-year deal on X or a 4-year deal on Y, and it's probably X is half, Y is half of X.
Aye, aye.
So there's a bit of that as well. And you can see how it goes as it goes along. If it gets 2 years on the line and it's, I mean, he's doing well, it's a great bit of business, but you can always change it as well. So I can understand it. And it's him, it might be McCarthy saying, you know what, I want to finish my career at Celtic. I wanted to play here all my days. I want to finish my career at Celtic. That'll take up to nearly 35. Maybe keep going after that, I just don't know. But he might see this as his last contract. He wants to be part of Celtic for the next 4 years, which would be both parties. He's a quality player. It just depends on how much you get left in the tank, that's all.
Right. I think it's important to finish, guys, this week by saying that on Sunday we have the first full house back at Celtic Park, I think, since March 2020, if I'm not mistaken, the St Mirren game. It's in the Premier Sports last 16, Premier Sports Cup, I should say, against Hearts. Generally, just brilliant to have clubs confirming that they've got full house again. Yeah?
It is, yeah. It's, you can see a difference last weekend. Actually, the Dundee game in 25,000, you could actually feel a difference. And I think Celtic could feel a difference as well. I think, especially when you got a head of steam going up, you could see the kind of electricity it created in the ground. I think Celtic did suffer last season with no crowds. I don't think it's an excuse because it's an easy one to kind of point to. I think they did point to it quite a few times through the season, but there's no doubt that it was flat at all times instead of the part when it's full, it does intimidate other teams as well. I mean, you've seen teams kind of crumbling in the atmosphere. So it does make a big difference. Listen, the biggest difference it makes is to the fans. I know, listen, we can cliches about 12th man and all that, and teams and managers and players will say, oh, it's great. But see, the most thing is people want to see their team. It's people who paid massive amounts of money last year to sit watching the telly and on laptops and all that stuff. It's allowing them to get back to that they're, I'm not saying it's more than a hobby, it's a way of life to some people. And it gets them back in to cheer their team on. And that means a lot to them, far more than it means to any player who might like a bit of a sing-song in the background. and a bit of kind of inspiration. But for people who have stumped up cash to go and watch a team, you can sense it on Sunday. Folk just delighted to be back in their seats, seeing their pals again. They hadn't seen them for a while. The folk can't stand two seats down, listening for 90 minutes. But all that is all part of the game. Right. So the biggest thing for me is for the punters to get back in their seats and get back cheering their team on is absolutely brilliant, because it's been a long kind of 18 months of kind of misery for folk watching it in the house from laptops and all this. It's a nonsense. It's just a return to normality and back to the atmospheres we're used to in Scotland.
And good chance for a bit of revenge after losing to Hearts just last week as well.
Definitely. Well, that's that exactly. And I think revenge probably this stage of the season, but I think a team like Hearts will be decent. Celtic last season as well, obviously the no trophies after all the trophies for 4 years. I think that's quite important as well to stay in all the competition. It's a really challenging game for this last 16 stage, to Royd. So I think it'll be an end, especially coming back off the European game as well. So good games keep coming non-stop. It's good to watch.
Guys, as always, it's been an absolute pleasure. It's my favourite time of the week, sitting down with you guys for the Celtic podcast. I'm already counting down the minutes to next week. But it's been a pleasure. Michael, thanks very much.
I thought you were going to say the best time of the week is when we finish for you guys.
That's what I was thinking.
And the best part of it, I get to see Cheerio to you two clowns.
No, it's been a pleasure. And Graham, thanks very much.
No worries, Daniel. Take care, mate.
And I'll, as I say, I'll hopefully speak to you again next week. And thanks very much for listening.